FITR, that is some trippy ass shiza.
almost.
Yeah, that was White Poppy, who is on the cover of Discorder magazine this month. Yes, this, of course, is the Discorder radio show. I am Wade, along with
CJ, your one and only.
And he is the one and only. And speaking of the one and only, this is the one last show for us. Don't worry out there, Discorder fans. It's the last show in this time slot. CJ, care to elaborate?
Right. So we have spoken with the gods, and they have said that we can move to Tuesday at 4:30. So if next time you are tuning, looking for the Discorder show, feel free to tune in at 4:30 on Tuesdays, or check out our podcast, which we will make.
Yes, indeed. 4:30 Tuesday will be the new Discorder time. But what is great about it is, for those who have been listening, our loyal listeners, every second week, we're no longer going to be a bi-weekly show. This means by going to 4:30 on Tuesdays, we're going to be on every single week.
That's right.
That's four shows a month, or five on when we get five Tuesdays in a month. So 2 to 2.5 hours a month of Discorder. So twice as much content, twice as much music. And CJ and I have got a lot of great plans to not only bring out the new weekly edition of the show, but also add some more regular content for you. So we're excited to bring that. And the first show will start in less than a week's time, next Tuesday at 4:30.
Absolutely. And we will be highlighting some of the excellent bands featured in this month's issue, including Fine Times.
Yes.
Who you interviewed.
I did. That was so great, guys. Amazing album. I'm not just saying that because I interviewed them and been listening to it, but this album is one of my new favorite sort of catchy albums of it makes my autumn 2012 playlist for sure. We'll definitely get to some of those tracks on Tuesday. We also are going to hear a little bit more from other bands that have been featured this month, including Cartoon College. And who else? Nick Everett and everybody. And Talent Time. So that's all coming up over the next month. 4:30, Discorder show. New time, new show. Same great personalities, yourself and CJ.
Absolutely.
Myself and CJ. Okay, so because of this is being our last show, we're actually going to do something a little special today. We're going to play an audio feature that I had the pleasure of producing for my arts and culture class a couple months ago. But the content is very relevant to Discorder Radio. It's all about indie music in Vancouver, and why, aside from places like CITR and a couple other stations, which we won't bother naming right now, why we don't hear much indie music on the radio. So that is the gist of this little audio feature. So for those Discorder fans out there listening, thank you for your loyal patronage. At 6 o'clock on Wednesdays, join us for the future at 4:30 on Tuesdays. Oh, and also quick shout out to my man Chris Data. He sent me an email request today for the band Tamale Impala. Tame Impala, I should say. We will try to get to them in the coming weeks. Sorry we can't play your request today, my man, but we're going to put on this special feature right now. Why Indie Music is Everywhere But on the Radio, by yours truly. And you're listening to the Discorder Radio Show for the last time at 6 o'clock. And where are we, CJ?
We are at UBC Vancouver.
And more specifically, CITR 101.9.
Of course.
March 21st, 1952, Cleveland, Ohio. Local DJ Alan Freed from WJW Radio organizes the Moondog Coronation Ball at the Cleveland Arena. At the time, the most remarkable feature of this concert was its mix of black and white musical performers. With an estimated 20,000 individuals trying to crowd into an arena that held slightly more than half that, and worries that a riot might break out as people try to crowd in, the fire authorities shut down the concert after the first song by opening act Paul Huckleback Williams. The legacy of the show is that it is widely considered the first major rock and roll concert. The legacy of DJ Alan Freed is that he is credited with coining the term rock and roll. and by launching the career of dozens upon dozens of young musical acts, both black and white. The song The Hucklebuck by Paul Williams was made popular due to the open-mindedness and keen ear for good music that Freed displayed. He played the song to a racially mixed audience over and over and over on the radio, which subsequently opened the doors to the likes of Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, The Platters, and Bill Haley in the Comets. That's how it was done back in the day. The DJ and the radio picked the records. If you happened to live within the broadcast radius of a given station and liked the music, you could go buy the record at the local record shop. And that's how careers were launched, and that's how stars were born. 60 years later, much has changed with rock and roll, a term which expressed the cutting-edge music of the day. And one of the most notable changes is the name itself. The role has been dropped, and now there are many different genres which express some form of gratitude to the rock. Classic rock, soft rock, modern rock, alternative rock, and the buzz term for much of today's new music, indie rock. Indie rock, derived from independent, describes the small and relatively low-budget labels on which it is released and the do-it-yourself attitude of the bands and artists involved. In the early 2000s, the changing music industry, the decline in record sales, the growth of new digital technology, and increased use of the internet as a tool for music promotion allowed a new wave of indie rock bands to achieve mainstream success. Despite the questionable integrity across the board of the term indie in indie rock, here in Canada in the year 2012, that musical genre is more popular than ever under the rock umbrella and has given many of these quote-unquote indie bands a taste of commercial success. Whereas radio stations used to be the place to tune in to all the latest and greatest hits, the last decade has brought forth a slew of artists subscribing to the same formula whose success can be attributed almost entirely to online buzz. Many of these acts, including the Arctic Monkeys, Bon Iver, Fun, and the Arcade Fire, appear to be everywhere except for the one medium where you expect to find them, traditional FM bandwidth, commercial radio. Andy Ross, program director for Classic Rock 101 in Vancouver and 30-year radio veteran, tells us why.
The template has changed ever since record companies lost money and lost power because they didn't take downloading seriously. So there were a bunch of groups that all of a sudden figured it out that they're going to be able to sell their music online. And what used to be CDs and sending it to radio stations and you get played on the radio and that's what makes you the money, doesn't make them the money anymore. That's why they're all touring now. The whole program has changed for them. And they're going on the road and exposing themselves and they're creating their own Facebook pages and making the music available to their fans directly. So the model has just changed.
Tamara Stanners works for The Peak 100.5 FM. Along with The Shore and heritage rock station The Fox, they are one of three stations in Vancouver that plays a contingency of indie rock. As the assistant musical director of The Peak, which lies somewhere in the middle of the ratings game, Tamara is all too familiar with the change model and the business of radio.
Traditional thought in radio has been that you have to play familiar music and music by well-known artists in order to get the ratings, generate the people to listen, and then make the money. So it's really all a function of a radio system that's worked for years, for decades really, where there's ratings and advertisers buy radio time based on the ratings that a radio station will have. And the traditional thinking has also been that independent artists don't bring along with them a very big audience. But we knew that to be untrue. I mean, there have been people for years who have loved independent music who were kind of just left finding it on their own. And we knew that if we put something together that would, really actually use the listeners who are out there who are already putting it up now on the internet, all the stuff that they loved. And we just kind of picked from what was on the internet, playing the independent artists, that there would definitely be an audience that was interested in that, for sure.
The Peak is a bit of an anomaly, as their station, which was granted a license in 2008, has a 40% CanCon requirement
along with 15% emerging artist requirements. Higher than average license requirements in both categories, in order to convince the CRTC that they were worthy for a license, they applied with ambitious goals to increase not only their Canadian content, but Canadian musicianship aptitude.
Is because we wanted a license desperately and realized that in order to convince the CRTC that we were the best use of a frequency, that we really did have to go out there with something different and really support Canadian artists and developing Canadian talent. That was our absolute true belief. And our general manager, Jerry Siemens, had applied for several other stations and we didn't get them. And he wanted to do something because he'd seen other stations come up with great ideas for Canadian content development. So the whole idea was that we would do something that was bigger and better, something that would really, really, from the ground up, develop the Canadian music industry in Vancouver, and then it would be worthy of airplay, not just here in Vancouver, but right across the country, and then hopefully internationally as well.
The Peak Performance Project is a professional development program to help new and emerging careers in the music industry. The station is investing over $700,000 per year into the project, which over a six-month term is designed to educate, promote, develop, and hopefully launch the careers of some of BC's best up-and-coming artists. It also hopes to foster the BC music industry and create a sense of community amongst music professionals. The winning group receives $100,000 toward the development of their band, with similar cash incentives for the runners-up. Sarah Jackling from White Rock, BC, started her band, The O'Wells, out of high school about 4 years ago. Last summer, they were invited to be part of the Peak Performance Project's Top 20.
Performance Project changed my life, to be quite honest with you. I learned almost everything that I know about the music industry from that project, and I felt completely overwhelmed after going to the boot camp that they have, where you listen to speakers and you have all these shows, and it was just, my mind was blown. But you know, being involved with a radio station is great because I got to connect with so many fans that never would have heard me before, as well as we got to play in the Red Room with some amazing bands. Basically, the relationships that I made in the Peak Performance Project, they're lasting today, and I feel like they're going to last for a long time.
As part of the Peak Performance Project's Top 20, each band gets to have a single in rotation for the length of the project. I asked Sarah about how integral it was to the success of her band to have a song on commercial radio.
It's kind of just like a milestone. When people ask you, why should I book your band or why should I pay attention to your band, you say, I was in the Peak Performance Project. I know I played here. Another thing to say is, I've been played on the radio. I've been played on these stations. And, you know, the more commercial the station, the more people are going to pay attention. It's just, it's how it is.
Vancouver Sun music critic Francois Marchand has 15 years' experience reporting on the music industry, and he agrees that radio airplay is important to an up-and-coming band. But despite indie music's growing popularity, he is not surprised that we don't hear much of it on the radio.
Stations that play indie music. The reason for that, I think, is fairly simple. It's because indie music fans don't listen to radio. In a general sense, I don't listen to a lot of radio. I listen to tons of indie music, but I don't really listen to the radio. I think it's because the mode of transmissions, for indie music, have shifted to digital. And people listen to their indie music more on their computers and portable devices more than anything else. I think that's why there's no real money to be made in indie music.
I think it's a mistake to think that, you know, you have to get your song on the radio if you want to be famous. That's just not true. I feel like they'll play your song on the radio if you're doing something important or exciting. They're going to want to you know, celebrate that. So that's kind of what I've figured out in the past year, is that, sure, some people can, you know, break out on the radio, but it doesn't happen that often anymore. Now it's YouTube or you know, opening for a bigger band or getting a song on a commercial, something like that.
The band Tennis comes from Denver, Colorado. They're a husband-wife combo who met in philosophy class at college, and after taking a 7-month sailing trip, they decided to start a band. On this night in Vancouver, they play a packed gig in front of 350 people at the Biltmore, and they seem to represent the true spirit of indie rock.
I'm happy where we're at. Like, we could stay here for the next 20 years, and I'd be totally happy playing the Biltmore. Like, you know, once every few months or so. Like, that's great. Like, we don't need much more than that. Like, the days of playing arenas and stuff like that and having your song on major radio, that's not a goal of mine, and I don't think it's a goal of any of ours. But, I mean, we're trying to do it right now because it's something that seems like would help us in the long run. But it's I'd be totally fine if it never happened. I think there's a ceiling on our heads right now because we're not entering the, like, commercial radio world. And that ceiling is, it's quite low. Like, we definitely barely make a living doing this. But we do make a living, and we're doing something we love, so that's perfectly fine with us. But from what I hear, commercial radio still sells records, and it still is a huge source of income for bands that are being pushed on major radio.
Despite the fact that they've never had one of their songs played on traditional commercial radio, they recently played the Jay Leno Show, have attracted the Black Keys' Patrick Carney as their album's producer, and have done quite well in other arenas.
We get a lot of airplay through just Sirius XMU and related channels. And I mean, we did really well on college radio this year, which it's kind of a funny thing. Like, I think we were number one on college radio charts in America for like a month and a half or something, like absurd, like crazy like that we still to this day are trying to like digest. We still don't really understand how that happened.
Although a relatively new band, Tennis seems to possess a maturity of sound that resonates of the innocence of the 50s and early 60s. And like their sound, music critic Francois Marchand also sees the spirit of yesteryear with the medium they were most successful on.
I think college radio for a lot of indie bands is the entry point. They will send in, you know, that's where you send your CD. It's where you make friends with, you know, the local DJ that plays the type of stuff that maybe kind of sounds like what you do if you're in a band. Or, you know, that's basically your first networking ability is college radio, and you send it out to all the college stations, and they'll give you a chance. Most of the time, they'll be like, hey, it's in the new stuff. And most college radios have a ratio of new stuff that they have to play, and that's dictated by, you know, their programming directors. So they'll go in and, you know, they'll go through the pile of CDs and just grab something and go, oh, that looks pretty cool, I'll put it on, and then, you know, that's your entry point. It's the same kind of model as getting a blurb in a weekly across the country. If you get a blurb in a weekly, it's the same as getting a play on college radio. You just got a little chunk of an audience, and maybe you made a couple more fans.
There are over 140 community campus radio stations in Canada, and with that, the spirit of old-time radio helping to break down the hard-to-tackle commercial barriers for up-and-coming indie bands. The CRTC, who has much more Canadian content and emerging artist requirements for campus stations, recently introduced the CRFC, Canadian Radio Fund of Canada, which will donate $700,000 annually to the 140 campus stations across Canada. Here in Vancouver, the campus station is known as CITR 101.9 FM and has been a community mainstay on the FM dial for over 30 years. Robin Allam is the program director.
Canada, in terms of campus community radio stations, that's what our role is for, mainly to help expose Canadian independent musicians. In Vancouver's sake, I think we're lucky because we have so many independent musicians and a thriving scene here. And for this station, it's a natural fit. It's easy for us. We have a great connection with our various hosts, which we have doing our 90 programs over the course of the week. Our hosts will be able to easily go out into the various communities and reach out to the various musicians and create that instant connection.
Even though CITR's reach pales in comparison to the reach of their partners on commercial radio, they do have much more freedom of taking chances on new artists and allow their hosts and DJs the chance to experiment with music they haven't heard before and play what they want.
The role of the DJ nowadays is more as a personality than a tastemaker. I would argue in a lot of stations, except maybe for college radio, which is still still operates the same way it always has, and that might be more in line with 50s style radio and 60s style radio, where the guys bring in crates of records and go, oh man, I've been listening to this. I went to the record store. I saw this awesome single. I bought the single. I'm bringing it in. That's the old style of DJing. That's the taste making style of DJing, and that's more in line with college radio than it is with modern rock radio.
And here, I know we've been at the cutting edge of, for example, you may have heard of Grimes. She's been rising lately, and our hosts were playing her album before it was even released. It was leaked, so they had it broadcasting over the air. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but it's out there, and that's what we enjoy doing, is bringing this kind of cutting-edge new emerging stuff out there to listeners who might not have heard of it yet, and doing at the forefront.
One of the places elsewhere that has been very helpful in giving exposure to up-and-coming Canadian bands has been the CBC's internet-based new music source, CBC Radio 3.
So they banked on new technology from the get-go, and on indie music being inherently directed at independent-driven people that have the technology and want to stream stuff and want to listen to the podcast on their own time, and they allowed their listenership more freedom and latitude, and they collected everything. So they took new technology and they took the college radio approach, and they let their DJs and their listeners kind of shape their playlist.
Before I let them go, I wanted to know from my panel of indie rock and radio experts if they thought that indie music and commercial radio needed each other, or if either one was missing out by not spending more time together.
Is commercial radio missing out? Probably. I think there's a good argument to be made that as much as commercial radio bitches about the CBC, it being taxpayer funded and all that stuff, they're still not doing what CBC is doing, which is to innovate. They're very much at the mercy of their automated systems and antiquated labels and so on. So some of them will try to move into indie rock and new music and so on, but they're so slow at doing it that it becomes sort of like the Juno for best new artist. Or best new group, it's like best new group. You've been working for 7 years, you have 4 albums under your belt, here's your best new group, Juno. So that's the problem with commercial radio, is that I don't think it's willing to make the kind of leap that let's say Radio 3 did.
Sarah Jickling of the OLs.
If people on commercial radio are willing to kind of stick their neck out and maybe help a band to the top instead of saying, we'll wait for Toronto to play it, we'll wait for another city to play it, we'll wait till it gets this many plays. Because if everybody's saying that, which is what, in my experience, what everybody says, then nobody's going to play your song. So if there's a couple radio stations across Canada, like The Peak, who do say, hey, I'll play your song, independent band, sure, I'll give you a few spins so that you can get the ball rolling, then maybe, radio will be a bit more important instead of this completely closed-off world that you need to have tons of fans to even get into.
Andy Ross, program director for Rock 101.
Does commercial radio need indie music?
Commercial radio needs new music. You know, it doesn't matter if it's indie or if it's or if they're signed or it doesn't matter at all. I think commercial radio needs new music, and the indie artist just needs to be exposed, and they have all these different avenues to be exposed now. And there are a lot of indie bands that are touring across North America, and they're very successful without any radio airplay.
Tamara Stanners, assistant music director at The Peak.
Does indie music need commercial radio?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that commercial radio can be the megahorn to spread the word. And in some cases, I really just think we are kind of like the gateway to such a huge bunch of music that people aren't getting access to. But once you open that gate and start looking into it, it kind of opens up a whole new world. So even though we can't play all the great indie art talent that's out there, and we would love to, believe me, we can't get to all of it, it still provides all of these up-and-coming bands with an opportunity to get the recognition. Because I know that with, say, Dan Mangan, Said the Whale, Mother Mother, Hey Ocean, Yukon Blonde, all of these bands, you know, we were playing here on commercial radio. I think if we hadn't, they wouldn't have necessarily been picked up by Sonic in Edmonton and or by X92.9 in Calgary and then made their way further east. And it's really important, and they know it right away. I was talking to Ryan Gildemont about the difference between a tour before radio airplay and after, and he said it's really night and day, because you have this core of people who will go out and seek out new independent music, and they will be there. But, you know, that's maximum 200 people in a market like Calgary or Edmonton. He said, but then when you get the radio airplay, all of a sudden you get 1,000 people who will come to your show. You still have that core of the people who found you independently, but the radio provides that megahorn.
The radio has been a megahorn for decades upon decades and will continue to do so well into the future. The question for indie rockers, or whatever the it rock genre of tomorrow is, what will be the most effective mode of megahorning? Commercial radio, campus radio, CBC Radio 3, other digital spaces, or maybe future places whose thoughts we haven't even conceived? Thanks for listening to Indie Music, Emerging Artists, and Radio's Role in Pushing the New Music. Thanks to my interview subjects, Robin Allam, Patrick Bailey, Sarah Jickling, Francois Marchand, Andy Ross, and Tamara Stanners. Extra special thanks to Diane Noddle and Steve Pratt and the UBC Graduate School of Journalism for providing me with this platform to create this audio feature. I'm Jordan Wade. Thanks for listening, and be good to each other.